There are many very apparent gaps in your sciences and philosophies. There is still a host of unconquered diseases. I could mention a few of these, such as cancer, epilepsy, Berger's disease, multiple sclerosis, dystrophy, etc. Any doctor could add a long list to these. I may say to you truthfully that none of the conditions will ever be conquered from the physical side of life. You, who are medical men, have as yet limited yourselves entirely to the physical body and material mind. You have not yet realized that man is spiritual and that his physical body and mind are only outward expressions of the spiritual self. I will create for you an allegorical equation. If you had been, long since birth, in some obscure remote corner of the globe and were entirely unfamiliar with the civilized world, and could not speak its language, if you were then transported to some city and set down in front of a television set, you would quite naturally assume that the pictures came from inside the box. You would have no way of understanding the concept of transmission of electrical impulses from the transmitter. You would quite likely, in your curiosity, try to tear the box to pieces to see where the pictures came from. This is exactly your present position. Just like the uneducated person, you are still hoping to find the solution for the unconquered conditions in the human body within its own physical structure. You will keep on looking until the end of time, and you will not find the answer in the body. As I have said, the condition so incurred is reflected from the spiritual or psychic mind and body. Picture, if you will, the lawn in front of your home, which has a sprinkler system. When you turn the valve, the water spurts up through nozzles at regular spaced intervals. This is the lifeblood of your lawn, and it would quickly die if it did not have it. So it is with the physical body. Each tiny atom that is the basic substructure, for every cell depends on its energy source, not from the food consumed into the body but from the psychic self. This psychic self is, as I have explained, the sum total of all man's many lifetimes. Each person or patient must thus be viewed and diagnosed, not as the sum total of this lifetime, but from all the lifetimes. I know this is hard for you to visualize, but so were the pictures in the box, for he who did not understand. Because you have no measurements or instruments which can determine a psychic self, does not mean it does not exist. It means that you are merely ignorant of the fact. I have explained in previous transmissions that the psychic body, existing, as it does, in another dimension, is not subject, in a common sense, to some of the predetermined relationships which you have established. You cannot see it or sense it because, in your lack of concept, you have not developed the sensitivity. Roughly speaking, the psychic body contains all of the experiences, the negative and positive conditions, and all the other sundry happenings, which have occurred in the individual's life for perhaps many thousands of years. These experiences and happenings are contained as millions of tiny waveforms which revolve in miniature vortices, which in turn compose, in a similar equation, what you might term the molecular structure of the psychic body. As you have all agreed that, generally speaking, all incurable disease conditions that reside outside the contagious pathogenic realm are incurred from wrong thought habits, as the mind is only an outwardly reflected concept of the sum total of all experiences. It is therefore logical that such cures must come from within the psychic body. The psychic body is linked to the physical body, not only through the mind, but similar to your sprinkler system. You have a number of psychic centers or contacts in your physical body which directly transfer the life-giving energies which come from, and through, the psychic self. These centers are located in the solar plexus, and in the center of the forehead or pituitary, the extreme ends of the spine, the soles of the feet, and the palms of the hands, etc. These psychic centers reflect energy directly into the atomic substructures. This energy is the glue which holds the atom in an adhesive intelligent pattern. The atom, in turn, is a miniature counterpart of the numerous vortexes of waveforms which are in the psychic self, except, of course, that in the physical body, the atom is in a physical dimension. You have a basic understanding of what you term psychosomatic medicine. You believe that many of the small negative fears incurred in childhood become the nucleus for a big neurosis as an adult. This is quite true as far as it goes, it just doesn't go far enough. Each individual must, in your diagnosis, include any and all previous lives. As you know, often in discussions with patients, if a certain negative happening of childhood has been recalled, a partial and sometimes a complete cure is effected. This happens to only about 50% of the patients. If you could recall to the patients the negative happenings in his previous lives, you would get at least a 98% average of cures. The therapeutic action which revolves around such a cure from a mental disturbance has, as its basis, a very fundamental concept. Picture, if you will, a circle, and that this is the life cycle of the individual, and that at a particular point the negation was incurred, if it can be relived or recalled, in a mental way. At another particular point of this cycle, it will bring into play certain opposing dynamic forces which will cancel the negative quotient of the experience. The two different points of occurrence and dissipation may be widely separated in the evaluation of your earth time, such cures, or dissipations, being more effective at certain relative points. These are, of course, factors of harmonic relationship. Now I know that up to this time no earth science of medicine or psychiatry has developed a doctor who can so diagnose a person's life. Heretofore such a practice has been confined to a relatively few and in an occult sense. You have one outstanding demonstrator of clairvoyant diagnosis, who lived until quite recently, in your modern world. His name was Edgar Cayce. For your own benefit you would do well to read some of his many case histories. Here again, however, as he was practically alone in his understanding, there has been as yet no developed or general understanding in the medical profession, either of his work or any others who have so expressed themselves. Let me say at this time that, just as hundreds of years ago, comparatively little or nothing was known of your modern techniques, so in the future, when the ultimate solution and cure of men's illnesses is found, no longer shall practices be confined to the physical realm, but shall be an integrated concept of physical therapy and mental clairvoyance. The future doctor will not only be able to diagnose the superficial physical manifestations but will also be able to relate them to all of the patient's five previous earth experiences which have happened in his many evolutions and lives. I am touched somewhat with a feeling of gladness for my brother who is about to make an ascension, and it is a sacred and holy occasion, one which we do not distemper with sadness. Soon now you shall enter in with us to help us in the ceremony where he will depart for a higher realm. Buff, until then, rest in peace. Malvar, Chapter 29, My greetings to you, brother, and to my brothers and sisters on the earth. I see you have already arrived and are sitting on the bench in the temple garden where we had our last discussion. While you have been gazing at the wondrous beauty about you, you have also been watching the numbers of my people who are going into the temple, for the hour approaches midday when our beloved brother will make his ascension. You have already anticipated the identity of this brother as Shattuck, who gave you a transmission in my absence. Because of your somewhat as yet undeveloped familiarity with our ways and customs, you did not know that his beloved mate, who is our sister Waza, was also making the ascension with him. While we sometimes enter into this highest plane of existence on Venus as a single individual, yet is very soon that our true mate makes his or her appearance, just as the birth of Order will, in a few days, be duplicated by the birth of her beloved one. I will not take the time to discuss more fully the relationship of the two genders, as I have already discussed this somewhat in a previous transmission. But come, the hour is close. We will walk up these three steps which lead into the large arched doorway before you. These are three steps have the meaning or interpretative significance of man's three states of consciousness. As the whole temple is built upon these three steps, they reflect, first, the lowest step is the carnal nature, the second step is the mental nature, and the third step is the spiritual. This is also sometimes called the triad. Now we will enter the doorway. We will step aside and pause a moment while you get accustomed to all that is before you. While the overall pervading radiance within the temple is extremely bright, your eyes are becoming accustomed to it, and you are beginning to see more clearly what is before you. As you saw from the outside, this is a large circular enclosure, and around the outside circumference there are three rows of benches. These are already almost filled by my fellow Venusians. However, I see you are much more interested in the central portion. You are wondering at seeing something which somehow seems to remind you of an astrological Earth chart. The large double circle, which is about 50 feet in diameter, is composed of the purest red crystal. This crystal circle extends above the floor by about 1 foot. Around the outside edge of the circle is a wide band of the purest white crystal. The division is further emphasized by what appears to be bands of a golden-colored crystal. At certain regular divisions, this circle is divided into an equal number of segments by a line of pure blue crystal. In the center of each section of the white strip is a symbol which looks amazingly like the familiar astrological symbols. This entire circle is the basic astrological chart of our planet Venus. The Earth people have misconstrued the basic meaning of these symbols by referring to them as animals. This should not be done. The signs themselves are symbols which relate to certain controlling forces by which the planets are ruled, something like the chemical symbols of the Earth scientist. Each planet has its own number of divisions. The Earth has 12, the planet Venus has 13, and so on. Each planet therefore reflects in a direct proportion some, or all, of the elements of these controlling forces. You will begin to see that there is a reason why so much confusion exists in the Earthman's interpretation of astrology. 100,000 years ago, or more, he was taught this true concept of astrology, but coming down through the thousands of years of time without the personal guidance of some of the more masterly intelligences, he gradually warped and distorted these basic astrophysical concepts into something he could, in his Earth mind, compare more easily, just as your Earth scientist today knows very little about even the basic concept of transmission of energy from one dimension to another. He has been struggling for many years to evaluate the sun's energy and how it travels through the millions of miles of an apparent vacuum, as heat. It is not heat, neither is the sun hot. As I said before, the sun transmits energy from one dimension to another, just as the wheel of your auto transmits the energy from the motor to the road. There is, shall I say, a huge cosmic motor, or better a spiritual motor, which is connected to the sun. How this is done I will not attempt to explain until you have further grasped the idea of dimensional energy transference. The energy, as it is reflected from the sun, is not heat or light until it comes in close contact with the Earth. There, in the strong magnetic and static fields, and with the combination of atmospheric friction, it is transformed into heat and light. All of you have seen a snowy mountain top, and while you were sweltering in the valley below, the snows remained cool and eternal. The farther up you get from the Earth's surface, the less and less is the energy transference. If you could go up far enough, which many aviators have partially done, the temperature would drop to below zero, absolute. Beyond the ionosphere, as you call the protective energy shield, you would have to alter your entire concept of the values you have assumed on the Earth's surface. The Earthman of today is planning space travel by rocket propulsion. He is trying, through the means at hand, to evaluate what the conditions of space travel will embody. He has many surprises coming to him. But may I say, as time is short, that he will never accomplish space travel until he has learned more of the laws of energy transference. Even your weatherman is amazingly inaccurate in his predictions. He has not arrived at the point where he can see that his weather conditions are entirely the net results of the movement and behavior of the extreme high-frequency spectrums which I have called the magnetic fluxes. The weatherman should know that the weather fronts, of high and low pressure, are all induced by tides of magnetic fluxes which move in a vast array of structural lines, not only around his Earth, but throughout the entire universe. Getting back to the temple where we were describing the circle, you will also notice a large square cubicle of pure white crystal which is standing in the center of the circle. On one side, which happens to be closest to you, is a series of 7 golden steps made into a little stairway which connects with the top of this cube of crystal from the flat surface of the circle. Above the cube, in the center of a dome-like roof, you will also see that there is a ring of large discs of pure crystal, each one of a different color. Each disc and its color is directly over the symbol, in its respective segment of the circle before you. Now the time of the ceremony is here. Although there has been no sounds which you might normally associate with a large gathering, Yet there still is an even increased sense of silence. After a few moments you will again hear some of the peculiar very pleasant sing-song music of energy that you heard at the birth of Order. Now that you are listening to the music, watch in the space above the cubicle. You will begin to see what appears to be the vague outline of a tall flame. It is not a yellow flame as you might see on the earth. Now as it grows stronger and becomes more apparent, it is beginning to take on a wondrous beautiful radiance of countless colors. It has grown to the height of about 10 feet. All of the minds in this room are helping create this flame. There is also a projection of radiant energies through the 13 crystal lenses which are focused exactly on the spot where the flame is resting with its base on the crystal cubicle. Now the flame has assumed such proportional brilliance that you are almost blinded, and Shattuck and his wife Raza have made their appearance and are moving slowly, hand in hand, toward the 7 steps. Shattuck is tall and straight. His hair, a flaming mass of gold, falls about his shoulders, and while he has been here among us for about 2,000 years, his face is young and youthful. Raza, too, is very beautiful. Her hair is of a copper-red color. She, like her mate, walks straight and erect. Her beautiful features are unmarred by lines of age. Both Shattuck and Raza have their gaze fixed upon the flame. They do not look around. They do not appear to be sad or frightened, nor are they. Within their minds are pulsating energy currents of aesthetic love. They are in tune, and are part of the pulsating mind of God. And now the slow ascent up the stairway begins. At the top they pause. Just before the flame, then arm in arm they step into its pulsating radiant energy and are gone. Gradually the singing voice of energy dies down and as it dies, so does the flame. In a little while all is as before. Slowly my brothers and sisters begin their exit from the temple. Their faces are not filled with sorrow. Instead each one reflects some of the radiant beauty of the energy which they have helped direct. Each mind is filled with a new courage and a new measure of inspiration. Each one has rededicated himself or herself to their consecrated service of their fellow men, and so in the coming time we shall not forget Shattuck or Raza, for they shall come again among us from time to time, though we shall not see them quite as they formerly were, for they have ascended into another realm which is almost beyond our vision. Raza and Shattuck may come to us with others in our future days to teach new truths, to give us new inspiration and vision, and thus, my friends, most you also do likewise. Know not the fear of that which you call death, for death is the separation of the physical consciousness and means only liberation into a higher realm, and with each succeeding graduation do you ever approach and draw closer to the fountainhead of God. Malva, Chapter 30. Greetings again, brother and sister. We herein as you have been observing some hours of meditation and contemplation since the departure of our beloved brother Shattuck and our beloved sister Raza. I would say a word here too, for she likewise has ascended in the 7 evolutions through Shamba to the ascension. As I have been looking in your minds and sorting out your thoughts, I see that you have been rather excited about putting together some pieces of evidence which has caused you to believe that Shattuck was the man called Jesus, who lived on your earth 2,000 years ago. Now that you have come so close to the truth, I believe it is only fair to give you more definite information. I have carefully weighed and evaluated the chances of this information being a bit disconcerting to some of the earth minds who will read these lines. Yes, Shattuck was Jesus. It was not coincidence that you and Sister Ruth were all part of a carefully chosen plan whereby we could clear up some of the mysteries of Shamba, as you were both living in the Holy Land at the time of Jesus and, as you know, were very vitally connected with the crucifixion. Through your participation, as a channel for this expression, it was much more easily accomplished. The man Jesus, at the time of his birth, came from the planet Eros, planet not yet known by Earth astronomers. It was this bright, very highly evolved, planet which shed its shining rays in the early morning hours of the birth. It was on this planet that the Master, Jesus, went through a series of evolutions, where he learned the secrets of higher powers which, in his earth life, enabled him to perform the many miracles. As I have said, the great ones on Eros are quite highly advanced, so much so that they can guide their planet through the universe wherever they wish to go. There are, however, many abstract concepts in the evaluation of the various positions which man evolves into. These might be called adepts, masters, or lords. In the infinite concept they are not so called, but they assume a certain relationship which expresses its own quotient of infinity in the whole structure of the universe. We, here on Venus, who understand these truths do not evaluate ourselves by assuming any position other than that which relates to our particular service to our particular planet. Thus it is with the seven cities of Shamba, and while each city has its own particular relationship and function in the service of mankind, yet all have the same general appearance. Many Earth people, including a few who live in your modern times, have caught glimpses in psychic moments of these cities. So while they all generally agree somewhat as to their general appearance, apparently no one knew, nor were they given information that there were not one, but seven cities. In our explanation of Azure we have only seen a small fraction. As I have mentioned these seven cities which comprise Shamba, it is also only fair that I give you more information. However, the subject here is very broad, and could easily cover a number of volumes, but a short digest will give you something of an idea. These seven cities are functioning like Azure, in their own individual expression of their capacity to mankind, on numerous Earth planets. The seven cities, while they are all on a somewhat similar spiritual level, are on seven different planets. These are spaced like a belt around our particular galaxy or star cluster. Thus they can serve not only Earth but a large number of similar planets. There are other planets which also serve the lower orders of humanity, with Venus and her six sister planets. Each has a particular way in which service is rendered. One serves in the field of philosophy. We serve in the art of healing and adjustment. Others serve in fields of political and other types of leadership, poetry, music and kindred arts, science, religion, etc. As in other cities, we have large galleries with exhibits which depict the entire history of mankind in his evolution through the various planetary systems. There are also laboratories where a student can go and learn all the scientific arts which relate, in their innumerable numbers, to the expression of life on these numerous planets. It would take you many years to explore our city alone. There is one more point which I would like to clear up in the ceremony of the ascension you witnessed. While it was performed in the large central temple, this was especially done because of the high position of Shattuck and Ruza. Sometimes, however, the ascending individuals may choose to use a more private way. They will thus make their ascension in any one of the small altar rooms like the one which we saw at the birth of Uda. However, in each instance of ascension, whether it is in the central temple or in one of the small altar rooms, the process is the same. Throughout the preceding chapters and our various discussions, I have attempted to give you not only a word picture of our planet and our city, but I have also tried to bring you some of the more important elements which will enter into your future lives. Whether or not this will be of any value will depend upon each individual. In God's great universal world there is no one who will stand over you with a whip, neither will we turn our backs to you when you need help. The important thing to remember is that your progress or your evolution or whatever you get out of life, whether here or hereafter, depends upon your own attitudes. No one with a closed mind gets very far. Your book of life is written with your own hand and all that you are you will see, because they are the things which compose your spiritual body. It is logical to assume that these be of a nature which can live and function in a world which is a part of God. It is with great reluctance that I must write the final lines and speak the last words which will bring this book to a close. Now I say to our beloved sister Ruth and brother Ernest, that you have indeed rendered a great service for which we are grateful, and although these last lines are being written, it does not mean a termination of our contacts. In some future time, we will again return to you in this capacity and new volumes will be written, as they are required by the seekers of truth. I further appreciate my own personal opportunity and that I was granted the opportunity to speak as I wished. If there are some doubts or questions as to any of the information, please feel free to send the thought and we shall add to or create new chapters, as you see fit. My only regret is that we could not further explore our city at this time but, as I have said, we shall do that together sometime at some future day. So with all our love may you prosper and find the fullest measure of God's eternal love. The Venusians. Man goeth about the earth and there is much knocking and grinding, likewise there is great haste unto the end of nothing. And that man findeth in the pain and anguish of his own doings and with the knocking and the grinding, and the great haste he shall find the emptiness thereof, and that he shall cry out against the emptiness of all of this and that surely he has wasted his life. And I say unto you that though he is all of these things in many lives that he is long-suffering yet surely he will not slacken neither put aside all these things until he seeth only with the Spirit and heareth only of the Spirit and that verily he speaketh with the voice of Spirit for surely now he is all of these things of Spirit and so becomes as one with God. Addendum: a word from the channel. It had been my original intention that as a channel for this book I would remain unheard and unspoken. However, in view of two recent national announcements, I have been prompted to add or point up several of the more vital and pertinent issues contained in this book. And while these issues have been quite thoroughly and adequately covered, yet I believe what I have to say will not go amiss. A few days ago, our government announced it was planning to build a long-dreamed-of space satellite. They had hoped to project some sort of rocket which would travel in an orbit around the Earth. Almost immediately on the heels of this announcement, Russia also announced similar plans. It is quite obvious that, while these two similar projects were loudly acclaimed as scientific projects and inspired for the sake of pure science, behind it all was the same old militant ulterior motive. And so again it has come to pass that two nations are extending their right hands in a gesture of friendship and peace, while in their left hands they clutch the weapons of war. It should be equally obvious to the leaders of our nation that after thousands of such wars and peace treaties this too will come to naught. True peace will only be attained in an absolute concept of brotherly love, and in the perception and conception that all mankind, as individuals or collectively, have their own way and right to live. Back in 1945 the Second Great World War was brought to a sudden, dramatic and ghastly climax by the explosion of atom bombs over Japan. It can be said that these explosions ushered in a new atomic age. It can also be said that it is also an age of fear. Since that time mankind all over the earth has walked in the shadow of that fear. Not only did the explosion of those atom bombs bring a new way and concept of life to our people, but it ushered in another age. Almost immediately the skies seemed to be filled with strange glowing objects or spacecraft from outer space. In the years following these various thousands of appearances, everyone has become space conscious. Every little boy has had a space suit. He can and does frequently indulge in rocket takeoffs and other things which are supposed to be part of this new science, while as yet man has not, from this earth, produced a craft which is capable of traveling into free space. As in the years following the first appearance of these craft, the world has been divided into two camps, those who do, and those who do not believe in flying saucers or spacecraft. In a certain sense both camps are right. The great mass and preponderance of evidence, and photographs, which support the appearance of many and numerous types of spacecraft cannot be denied. Nor can we deny the reasonable equations and views of those who do not believe. The truth is that spacecraft have not, as yet, appeared in this third-dimensional world, nor will they do so, for this third-dimensional world, or material world, as we know it, is not conducive to such craft and their operation. In the preceding pages and chapters of this book much emphasis is given to what is termed space and energy, and the relationship of energy to mass. In the various equations and hypotheses which have, up until this time existed, all have missed certain relative and vital points in their relationship to energy and mass. It has not yet occurred to the scientist that while he has 101 elements, and that they each express in their own way, through the difference of their atomic structures, a relative weight, or a reactive consequence to certain known physical laws. If he thought for a moment, it would become obvious that there were not only 101 elements but perhaps many thousands of other elements, which existed in other dimensions which were not reactive to our physical laws. He has also not correctly evaluated a true concept of an atom. An atom is not a solid particle, neither is it composed of a number of solid particles. An atom is composed of tiny vortexes of wave energies which are pulsating, in outer rings of wave forms, around a central vortex.